Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the AEW Dynamite Preview. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hamflett and Michael Sidgwick, here to look ahead to tonight's episode of AEW Dynamite. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only review AEW Dynamite, but also AEW Rampage, Raw, SmackDown, NXT 2.0 pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. As I said, though, joined by Hamflett and Sidgwick to look ahead to Dynamite tonight. And I suppose, Michael Sidgwick, effectively, the go-home show for winter is coming.
Yes, absolutely. I'm looking forward to it. But following a pretty naff week last week, your expectations are always a little bit lowered. It's been a fairly rubbish day in the United Kingdom, ruined by ongoing pandemic anxieties and just appalling government. Absolutely appalling government. I need my stupid American wrestling show to be good for my mental health. And if that sounds like pathetic, that's the power wrestling has, I guess.
Yeah, that's what it's supposed to do as well. It's there to be an escape. And AEW is a better escape than WWE or most wrestling that we've had over the past 20 odd years. But what it isn't is the type of thing where you can like sit idly by and tolerate it not being that great. It has always allowed you to hold it to the highest standard. And it would be nice to see some of those standards reached tonight, especially with the big stuff. Especially with the, you know, they're like the teeing up title matches and things with big stakes. And it would just be nice again to feel a certain sense of consequence that I feel like has been lacking a little bit on the show since, well, I was going to say since Full Gear, but it probably trickles back a little bit before that, I would say.
We'll talk about the Dynamite Diamond Battle Royal in due course. But we should start with, I suppose, the final test, the final hurdle, the final victim for Bryan Danielson before he challenges Hangman Page for that AEW World Championship. It is effectively the beginning of John Wick, this, isn't it? Because he's going to kill the puppy that is John Silver.
Yeah, absolutely. I wish I wasn't such a massive nerd, Mark, just spoiling preview content in reviews because I'm so delighted by the possibilities that this promotion conjures more often than not because I've told people what I want to see from this match already. I will reiterate if you haven't remembered or didn't listen in the first place. It's a weird time to do this specific match. It's location specific in terms of the way I think it should be booked regardless because I want John Silver to be his biggest challenge yet, which seems counterintuitive to the fact that you want him to look, you want Danielson to look at his strongest ahead of the title match. But the way I would go around that, only because you don't really get many rematches in AEW, and I think Danielson versus Silver's got potential to be a sleeper TV hit of the year. Yeah. I think it could be friggin' fantastic. So I don't want it to be cruel, even though I probably would get involved in the story if it is like another 5 minute one hope spot deal. But I feel like we've seen enough of that. I feel like we need another reminder of just how great John Silver is, because he's like the guy in the Dark Order, not named Hangman Page, who's got the potential to do like a TNT title run or something like that, I feel. So I think we are overdue a reminder of how awesome he is. I think his explosive comeback sequence, not only is it always great, but Danielson selling that with like, Jesus Christ, what's my hubris let me in for here, will be phenomenal. And an incredible near fall will follow that comeback sequence after a ripper of a match. And then Danielson will say, right, okay, well, I'm going to give you the finish to the Hangman Page match right now, because when I've got your hands held with mine, and I'm caving your head in with my foot. There's no escape, and I want him to do the TKO finish. I'm a ghoul because I've pitched that finish for literally every single Dark Order match, but he says he's going to kick in the heads of the Dark Order. I want that taken literally tonight, and I want him to do it with a really furious body language. The implication being, yeah, I might be taking 12 to 15 minutes, but look what happens when you piss off the dragon. It's almost bad for you that I got tested tonight, Hangman, because I'm going to kick this guy's head in.
And the flex as well, because John Silver obviously does the pose. It works so perfectly, doesn't it?
Absolutely, and he could do that mid-match, and then Silver can do it earnestly in response. Like, there's loads to play with here.
Yeah, echo all of that, really. I expect this to be a bit of a gem. That's not to say that you wouldn't expect something good anyway, but just because ultimately this is a setup match, you don't necessarily have to have the highest expectations. The cruelty, as Cedric points out, is going to be far more earned. Like, I've sort of suggested that Brian's almost been playing a mustache-twirling villain in that he just is seemingly reveling it for the fun of it. And when all of this is done, and I think that's maybe been a little bit of a problem with the programme, actually, because he stepped into the Jon Moxley role. If we'd have been talking about that angle with Jon Moxley in it, we'd be looking not just at the match, we'd be looking at, right, we think Hangman Page is going to win, and then what happens with Jon Moxley as a result of this loss. It hasn't really felt like we've been able to do that with Bryan Danielson versus Hangman Page. And it feels a little bit WWE as a result. It feels like there was nothing before. There's a two-month rivalry. There's a payoff, and then it's gone. And it was just this thing that happened to these wrestlers for a few weeks. And I think that's maybe, as good as the matches have been, why there's not been quite as much heft emotionally compared to that very first promo that they cut against each other. I think we'll get that tonight. I think we'll approach that as close as we've got thus far, more so than you would have expected maybe out of, say, Colt Cabana in Chicago. I think we'll get that here just because of what Cedric points out. They want to show you as much of John Silver here as they do Bryan Danielson. It would be nice, and I kind of think what it is at this point, and they've not given us enough that far. I suggest that there's going to be much in the way of Page and Danielson tonight, probably boilerplate stuff like last week. But I would like to see them figure out, they're the creative people, like figure out a way to turn the heat up on that specific bit as well. It's not just Brian versus the Dark Order. He's fighting for the world title.
Yeah, that's a very good point, actually. I think, yeah, just to re-emphasise, it is next week. It's a world title match. And yeah, he may have murdered all of his friends, but legitimately he is the biggest threat to Page's title, right?
Which he really wants. I think Hamflet's really hit on something there. We know AEW's booking formula. Wrestler fights associates of ultimate rival to build anticipation ahead of the actual match and preserve it and all the rest of it. I think Hamflet's bang on. I think the fact that he should want that title symbolises that it's the best pro wrestler in the world who holds it. And that's what Danielson's entire persona is. I'd really like, in fact, a promo saying, right, I'm done with the Dark Order, that was easy. You could say that's easy after this match wasn't for the heat. And then say, right, I'm done with the Dark Order, I've proved my point. This is why I want that title. This is how important the title is.
Sort of related to that, actually. We've got the Young Bucks versus Best Friends being represented by Rocky Romero and Chuck Taylor tonight. But similar to what you two have just alluded to there, Hamflet, it's also a little bit about what's going on outside the ring for this one with Cole and Cassidy.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to having the Young Bucks back. Yeah, it feels like I've gone a little while without getting to see them wrestle. Since, I guess, Full Gear, I suppose, would have been the last time. They're going to wrestle before Hangman Page does, since that pay-per-view. That's weird how that's worked out. But I'm glad to get them back. I'm not hugely invested in the story, to be honest. That segment didn't land last week with the setup. The Best Friends, we give them a bit of stick sometimes in this podcast, because just the angles don't feel that vital. The matches often deliver, the big ones especially. This is not one of them, but there's plenty of precedent for the matches being good. But the angles just always feel proper, I don't know, like secondary or tertiary concern. There's something about these characters that allow you to just kind of like brush them off a little bit, as I think the Young Bucks probably will tonight. Cole and Cassidy is the more interesting element of this match. I'd have a lot to say. This feels a little bit, it's got a bit of that late 2019 Dynamite energy about it. There's not a great deal in the back end. There's not a lot that I can see going forward. But the match should be exactly what you expect, which is that kind of generic hot opener. Maybe that's a spoilt take. Maybe you should still be enthusiastic about these things, but I'm looking for a bit more out of all of this.
I'll be a bit more generous. I, too, have really missed the Young Bucks, and I've missed the Young Bucks specifically because we've seen a lot of trios matches with the Super Click. I've really enjoyed them.
Yeah.
But I've missed watching the Young Bucks in a tag team ring in a tag team match for quite some time, actually. So I'm really looking forward to just watching who I consider the best tag team of all time again. Chuck Taylor will be up for this. He's more broken than you'd expect, but he is quite like physically thrashed at times, Chuck Taylor, but I think he'll be bang up for this. We know from glorious precedent how well Rocky Romero and the Bucks work together. I'm expecting something really good, particularly since the Bucks haven't wrestled for this long. I mean, tag team of the year by any good faith, good taste person is so not, but I think they'll have the bit between the teeth and realize, hang on, like, I genuinely really want to have a great match here. It's all going to lead to some kind of Cassidy Cole confrontation on the outside. And I think that'll be a really fun element of it. So I'm expecting this to be one of those things where, like, oh, yeah, about 3.5 stars, this should be good. And then they're going to do something, like, really, really witty and creative in the middle of the match using the seconds. That's going to pop your tits off. Like, I think this will be a sleeper hit. I've got trust in the Bucks.
Young Bucks win?
Yes, without doubt.
Obviously, Young Bucks integral to the rise of AEW, some might say. And if you're a fan of that sort of thing, Becoming All Elite is available right now. WhatCulture.BigCartel.com. Michael Sidgwick's brilliant new book all about AEW.
Yes, absolutely. The Young Bucks were instrumental in the creation of that company, as you know, but I will tell you specifically why and how great they were with in-depth analysis if you order the book. And this isn't a bit, like, if you're thinking about ordering it, order it now. Copies are running out.
Someone else who was important in the early days of AEW, check out this segue, Riho is in action tonight against Jamie Hayter. I'm not 100% certain. I don't think it's been announced. I assume Riho may get Baker at Winter is Coming, or is that maybe going to be saved for something in the new year, perhaps? Obviously, this is
Battle of the Belts, perhaps?
Oh, quite possibly. Yeah, yeah. Hayter's there to soften her up tonight, regardless.
Yeah, my cynical side is telling me that they're going to do a Winter is Coming because they haven't got the best track record of booking Japanese talents in long-term stories. And I understand that Battle of the Belts is January and we're getting deep into December at this point, but that would still require 2 or 3 weeks of TV build, the likes of which AEW tend not to do often enough with their women's division. So for cynical reasons, I'd expect this to actually happen next week. You know what I would like here, right? Because this feels like, well, they can't beat Riho because she's got the match.
Yeah.
It's terrible booking if they do that, and they are not terrible bookers. This match would be so much more dramatic if they said, given the events that have happened within Britt Baker's stable, if Jamie Hayter wins, she gets Riho's title shot.
Wow.
I wish they added that stip because, one, it's the kind of common sense expectation if that were to happen. It's realistic. It casts doubt over the outcome. It furthers a dissension between Baker and Hayter. I don't know how that would inform the finish. Maybe it wouldn't have to. Maybe you just have
You'd have Rebel trying to help Jamie Hayter and Britt Baker being like,
yeah,
just hold back just a second. Like the Rebel mindlessly thinking, oh, it's for the team, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I like that as an idea. Sorry to jump on you there, but I discussed this with Andy earlier in the office. And I think that whilst that stipulation would be great, the fact it's not there, and I'm right in thinking this isn't beat Hayter for the match. It's Riho's got the match regardless. We're just putting you against Hayter, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So I like the idea that Britt Baker sends Reba Rebel in to get involved in this match. Maybe there's some miscommunication, shenanigans. Regardless, Riho wins. If you want to do it this way, but I like that as also pissing Jamie Hayter off for her being like, why? I didn't need you to do this. Yeah. And she just, like you say, it's more development in the... I mean, maybe Battle of the Belts is Hayter, potentially.
Potentially. They do go very slow burn on a lot of things. Like, look at the MJF Wardlow breakup. Like, that's been months, years, in fact, in the making. Regardless of the fact that they're not doing that stip, I've got really high expectations for this match. Just the dynamic. Hayter is, like, incredibly physical and powerful to the point where her stuff looks a little bit scary at times. Mm-hmm. She's better for being rough around the edges. I think she's an incredible prospect. And I really hope this is the start of, like, more consistent booking for her in particular. Her against Riho, who's incredible at selling and drawing sympathy and, like, crumpling in agony. I think this could be great if it's given enough time and a sense of importance.
Yeah, I love the dynamic. Just love it. The power disparity. And how the like Riho is gonna be that traditional wrestling chopping down the tree story, even though, you know, we're not framing Jamie Hayter as a giant. It's more just the fact that Riho's that small and that much smaller than the other wrestlers that she's kind of got to do this against everybody, especially somebody as nails as Hayter. I really want to see again because it just feels like it's been a little while the Jamie Hayter taking the bump from somebody doing a splash, like Riho just flinging her body at Jamie Hayter and Jamie Hayter selling it, because when she's tried in the ring, she's not gone down for her barely. And then you finally get that awesome impact sell that Jamie Hayter does.
She's done it a couple of times.
She's done it a couple of times, because obviously she's got it in her locker and it makes her opponent look fantastic.
It's awesome, I forgot about that.
So it's such a useful element to any match, but especially this one where Riho's got to throw all this caution to the wind. I just think it's a really, really nice pairing. It's another... I wish AEW... not just for all the obvious and generic reasons. One of the reasons I wish AEW was better to women was because when they're good, they're great. Like, there's quite the diverse and pretty dynamic, like, women's roster here. And just, it's a usage issue more than anything else, because it's not that hard to pull a pairing together like this and think, this is going to be one of the best matches on the show. They got a lot of combos like this. And I just wish, that's another reason why I kind of wish we'd get a bit more of it.
And for as much as we poo-pooed it last week, I think this merits having Britt Baker come out to do commentary. I'm not sure which one I'd like more, either her making her entrance and Jamie Hayter having to come out to Britt Baker's music, or Jamie Hayter making her entrance and then the match is about to start and then Britt Baker's music in. She's like, it's all about you, this, isn't it?
Yeah.
The commentary thing we talked about a lot last week, but... this is an important thing, because it's the age-old thing of when Jamie Hayter watches it back and maybe there's a bit of negging, a bit of, I'd have done that better from Britt Baker on commentary. Just more fuel to that fire.
What's annoying me now in anticipation of this match is that they've got loads and loads to play with, and I really hope they exploit all of it.
On that commentary thing, like, don't piss about with that. That didn't work. Like,
call that
a bad idea. Call it what it was. Pick a third man.
You can have a wrestler on commentary occasionally, but it doesn't have to be for everything.
Well, pick a third person, but just have them. If you're insisting on a three-man booth, like, have somebody, but just have them for the night and have them be the commentator. It's probably Taz, you know, but, like, just somebody in that role rather than this rotating, very convenient, very WWE arrival per match. You're inviting stupid trouble with that, and it didn't work for me at all last week. It made, like, hell with the formatting.
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Very excited to ask this question to you, Michael Hamflett, after last week's events. What's next for Cody Rhodes?
I don't know. And we try and keep these podcasts, like, to a certain time limit. And I just feel like we can go and go and go on Cody. And it's becoming easier, at least, to talk in reflection of what we've witnessed. A man on fire.
He smells like smoke because he was literally on fire last week.
Mr. Blobby level chaos in a main event that felt entirely unearned. Like, it's so much easier to talk reflecting on some mad stuff he's done than trying to predict his next move. And I'm not going to give him the credit it's in, because he's playing 4DJs. He's playing frustration with checkers pieces. Like, it's not... I don't know anymore. To spin off, because that's what Cody does, to spin off to the Pac Malakai Black stuff that has come from all of this, I don't like Malakai Black's toxic mist being more important than wins and eyes, and that feels rubbish. I don't like that Cody beating Andrade in a rivalry that wasn't really a rivalry has now...
The Blood Feud.
The Blood has now set Andrade back And it's like, right, we've got to recover a guy. That's pretty WWE. Oh, you broke somebody. And now you got to fix him. Why did you just not break them in the first place? Like little things like that. I don't know.
But
it did
give us Jose with his shirt off.
That was great. That was really good. Given the dynamite diamond ring, Jose. But the if anything at all, and maybe not a lot this week, maybe Cody probably knows that there's some weeks where it's worth stepping back a little bit. Maybe there's something in Brandi Rhodes being the one to douse the table and do a bit of acting while she was doing it. There was an angle Claxon going off with there about whatever her involvement in Cody's insanity is at the moment. Maybe there's a little something like an interview backstage where that's referenced or that's builds into whatever the hell they're doing with him. I don't know, Sige.
When inside baseball, when Wilborn sent over the stuff that we were going to discuss as a professional, I looked at this Cody question. I thought, I'm going to roll my eyes. I see the same conversations online, Twitter, message boards, wherever, about Cody, and it's all about Cody.
It's weird, isn't it? Because me and Andy have been talking about this quite a lot, you know, in the immediate aftermath, and we keep revisiting it whenever we're talking about AEW, about the fact that maybe it isn't necessarily about the resolution of this, i.e. does he turn heel, does he turn face, is he, you know, thinking he's a face but he's a heel, etc., etc., or is it just the conversation for conversation's sake, almost?
Yeah. Everyone seems bored and confused by it, and that's just not the feelings that you want to elicit within your wrestling fandom.
And it's drawing more and more things in, as Hamlet said there. You started out with, you know, Malakai and maybe Arn Anderson mixed in.
Who's the best out of them four?
Out of the four of them?
Yeah.
Mm.
Like, in the storyline, right?
When in terms of angles.
It's
parity at the moment, isn't it?
It matches. In AEW storylines, Hangman Page is definitively better than Kenny Omega, right? And Kenny Omega was the best, so how good does that make Hangman Page?
Yeah.
Great.
Funny.
But I don't know who's the best. I don't know who's any closer to getting a TNT title shot. Yeah, I don't know anything.
When you say parity, you mean they're all as bad as each other?
Yeah,
not
they're all sludging about in the mud.
Yeah,
it's toxic sludge.
Because it started off so well, like Malakai Black comes in, kills
him. It's awesome.
And then you go, we're going to do it again. You go, well, I suppose if he wins again, then we're doing it again.
It's not an aesthetics thing, but I'm pining as much for Fight Shorts Malakai Black as I am Trunks Mox, just because that reminds me of a feeling I had for that wrestler more than what we've had ever since.
And Andrade, he's been brought in, and then you know, that's drawn in, and you've got Arn Anderson constantly involved in this. And now Pac's gone blind.
So the implication is Cody's gone 2-1 to Malakai Black. But he won in the end. He's beaten Andrade in the more important match that people remember. Because I can't even remember the result of the one that they had on Dynamite. Even though I liked it, I can't remember who won. No. I think Cody lost because there was a heel beatdown angle. Whatever. 50-50. Does it go to Cody versus Pac? I don't care about any of this coming.
Did they used up a spot on pay-per-view for this with the weird, can they coexist? And then you were like, oh, okay, I get this. We're going for Cody and Pac. And then the week after, it's like, Cody's been DDT'd on the concrete after Dynamite.
And Pac's feuding with Malakai now.
We touched on this last week. The WWE used to say the John Cena thing because they were trying to justify its existence. Well, some booing and some cheering, but everybody's making noise. Like, it got normalised, but that was a bad thing. This idea that Cody just wants people to be having the conversations is the same. You can normalize that as what you want out of it, but it doesn't mean it's good.
They are doing stuff, just stuff, with Malakai Black and Andrade because they realized subsequent to their signings that they were going to reveal Punk and Danielson. Like, it's genuinely like kind of lost in the shuffle stuff, this, and it's a downer, a confusing downer.
It's sort of like, I don't know, growing out of a pair of shoes and then gifting them to someone, and someone going, wow, thanks for these Jordans, with his Twitter account where he's like, well, no one's ever going to be saying nice things about me for the next few months. You can have my Twitter account, job done. Right, finally, we've waited long enough, Sige, to talk about the beautiful diamond ring. MJF, two-time holder. I mean, you talked about bloody the MJF-Wardlow split. That means this time last year we were pitching this because we were talking about Wardlow potentially winning or being in the final. Because I'm right in thinking, because I always forget this, it's not winner tonight. It's the final two that will presumably go into a match.
Yeah.
A winner is coming next week.
That's it, yeah. That's always been the format, at least, so we can assume that's the case.
Yeah. And it's not as straightforward as many may think, i.e. a lot of people have been asking us questions. Actually, I've got a question that someone's emailed to me about MJF and CM Punk, because I think a lot of people are booking that as a straightforward, you know, get some other guys in there, you know, maybe Sean Spears and Wardlow have a little moment or whatever you want to do there. But it's all coming down to MJF versus CM Punk. But it's not that simple, is it, Sitch? Because you've got this stuff with Team Taz and Leo Rush and other, you know, storylines that can factor into it as well.
I'm expecting this to be incredibly deft. Like, just really resourceful booking. Like, one of my favourite elements of AEW is going to be wrapped up in this hopefully electrifying battle royal as well, given that Dante Martin's in it, like, Wardlow's in it, wrecking guys on one side of the ring, while Dante Martin's just doing his best not to fly out of it because his propulsion is so incredible. I'm expecting this to be great. Right, I need someone to explain something to me like I'm 10, and then I need someone to explain something to me like I'm 5.
Daddy, do you want to take it?
Well, I haven't explained it yet. Anyway. So, right. Can you remember Leo Rush's first... Oh, Leo Rush is back. And he's talking nonsense. It's not nonsense. I just don't understand it. The leveraged buyout stuff. When
yes.
He had that vignette with like all the wealth and so how rich he is, right? So he's a businessman. A leveraged buyout, LBO, is the acquisition of another company using a significant amount of borrowed money, bonds or loans to meet the cost of acquisition. The assets of the company being acquired are often used as the collateral for the loans along with the assets of the acquiring company.
Right.
Does this have anything to do with them doing a leveraged buyout of Team Taz? Or what am I talking about?
They've got Dante Martin. He's got him as an asset. So then he kind of like swoops in and just buys all of Team Taz from underneath Taz. He buys all the contracts from underneath Taz.
Potentially.
Yeah. It would make sense of a thing that feels more dropped than a current narrative device of like big money Matt Asley or Rush.
Yeah.
So. I know he is Team Taz, but in reality, he's there high-fiving Ricky Starks, for example. So that would
make... I used to work in this industry for 8 years as well. And I still haven't got a clue what it's about.
But yeah, I like that. So, like, and it makes sense. And it's obviously going to factor in here. I don't know whether this is going to be the blow-off. I mean, it could always come down to, you know, Leo Rush versus Dante Martin or, you know, Dante Martin, Leo Rush, and I don't know, let's say Ricky Starks, for example. Love seeing him back in the ring soon, please. Or it could just be a part of it where maybe Dante chucks out Powerhouse Hobbs, for example.
Yeah, they could. That's the best thing about a Battle Royale. There's loads of star maker moments. There's so many pops you can do. Like, that would be an incredible pop just because of the size differential.
It's nice that they've not overloaded this show, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. I hope this gets a lot of time to tell. Like, there's loads of really captivating stories. Like, the best stuff in AEW's mid-card. I know last week's was flat in execution, but otherwise, this Dante joins Team Taz stuff has just taken everyone by surprise. The Wardlow, MJF, Spears stuff's great.
Hmm.
The best mid-card stuff in this company is all happening in this match, which I expect to be electrifying and deft. As for who wins it, man,
at least the final two, I suppose.
Yeah, the final two. MJF versus Wardlow at Winter is Coming. As like an exhibition, before they like do the actual match, they could do something really impressive here where Wardlow's a little, not like, why am I so violent, or like rubbish melodrama, but a little bit like, not conflicted, but he doesn't go full Wardlow until MJF cheats and then he power bombs him. Yeah, there's absolutely loads here. I feel like the Wardlow and MJF stuff's really coming to prominence in the narrative. So I think they too will.
It's Punk, innit? CM Punk.
They would have advertised the hell out of it. So
yeah, they
would have
shown a picture with him at the front of the vault of everybody.
That's
in
a
the
good
match.
Point. I haven't thought that.
Yeah, well, which is weird because it sort of makes you feel like he's too big for it. Like, it sort of feels like this is a prize below what he would bother his arse with. But in the reality, it's a kind of a big deal. You know, like,
I don't hate that because it is kind of a big deal. But ultimately, it's MJF is a weapon to cheat with.
Mm.
But he's under the delusion that it's worth more than it is.
Well,
because he's a heel.
I would like this to be the end of MJF and the beautiful diamond ring because I just think it would be neat that CM Punk specifically brought it up. MJF can only win because of that ring on his finger and that guy Wardlow. So if Punk has anything to do with MJF losing the ring and serves as another divider between MJF and Wardlow, he's then proven his words to be prophetic. And it's ended up where he beats MJF and he says, look, what I had to do was I respected you enough to have to take away those things that I knew you were using, and then I was able to beat you. And it just becomes something that we can look back on that excellent promo and see yet another nice detail that they saw through. It's really exciting, this match, the potential of it. It's I don't want to say it's like un-F-uppable, because things can go wrong and do sometimes in wrestling, but it just seems like there are too many narrative opportunities for this to go wrong. There's just so many ways you can take it. Me and Murray were talking about a book, fantasy booking scenario we'd come up with. Murray had read something online where somebody suggested, well, what if Miro wins and that can be what he presents to Lana back at home, because, you know, he's still chasing that prize and that redemption and all that sort of stuff. And in order to arrive at that, you could do something where MJF is taken out of the Battle Royal somehow with some CM Punk related involvement ring off him. And then there's a bit of a, either what looks like a miscommunication, but is in fact Spears acting out MJF's jealousy and errantly swinging a chair, and out Wardlow like bundles out or something. And next week it's Miro just snapping Sean Spears with the game over, with the story being MJF saying, you better get that fucking ring. Like, Spears is going to win it and I'm going to get it back. And of course Miro wins it on the night, and Sean Spears plays Klutz getting destroyed in the game over. But like all of that, that's factoring in two or three separate storylines and coming up with a new winner. And then you think, actually, this prize does matter. It's a way to put the prize over as well. I do. I'm genuinely, fair play, because I remember the feelings around the first Dynamite battle, like Diamond Ring Battle Royale. It's a bit like, it's a bit wet, isn't it? And then over time, this has become of a certain prestige. Or there's
last year's actual match was incredible.
The match was so great last year. One of the best Battle Royals I can ever remember. So they've created a heightened sense of expectation. I'm really, really up for this.
I'm fascinated as to how this crowd responds to MJF. Either way is great. That's the best thing.
I hope
have you seen the sign?
I hope they're booing. That was what was teed
they've
up last
been
week.
He's really been trying, I think, anyway, to get that reaction. But either works, either it fuels his megalomania, and you know it's an aberration, or he gets booed, and it's just more fuel for CM Punk, and they can start to do stuff that doesn't. I've loved every promo interaction, but driving the storyline from something that's happened between them two, I feel like is the next. Do you know what I mean? They're taking shots at one of those reputation and careers so far. Like, I want it to firmly become part of the actual.
It's all a
text.
Little bit hypothetical at the moment, isn't
it? Yes, I want it to get really. I want the events to happen on television to inform everything that goes on.
Have you seen the new sign his parents have made?
Yes.
What is it? It says something like the last time he was cute and adorable or something like
last
that.
Last time he wasn't an asshole.
That was it, yeah. I knew we'd get there in the end.
He's like 4 years old.
Sorry, I got distracted there because 2.0 are on the big screen at an ice hockey game. It says the caption here. It looks like Montreal Canadiens won a teeth. Actually, maybe them might be my pick for the Diamond.
We've got all
the
way through the field together.
Yeah. I love your booking, both of you, but I'm going to stick with what I always say. History is going to three-peat itself, and it is going to be Maxwell Jacob Freeman in the final, and he is obviously going to retain, in my opinion, the beautiful Diamond Ring.
Who against?
Dante Martin.
Cool. Into that.
That's going to be
awesome, man.
Like, oh, I can't believe our Team Taz representative, just like Taz said, has made the final. And he's like, yep. Leo Rush is there. I'm having my cake and eating it too, because I was like, well, it could be the MJF and CM Punk storyline, or it could be the Dante Martin storyline. I'm just gone, why not both? So I don't know, but it's going to be fascinating. And like you say, if last year's is anything to go by, and the opportunities they've got in this, and the opportunities to create new stuff coming off the back of it as well, it's really, really exciting. But let us know your picks for the final two in the Dynamite Diamond Battle Royal on Twitter, along with your thoughts on everything we've discussed today, at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, you can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflet at
Michael Hamflet. You
can follow Michael Sidgwick at
M. Sidgwick.
Don't forget, you can get his AEW book right now, WhatCulture.BigCartel.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. Already available right now is our NXT 2.0 review, which is something. It's very much the day after the What Culture Christmas Party review. But if you've never listened to our 2.0 review before, today's the day to tune in.
But it's not always like that.
Yeah, it's not always like that. I bloody hope it's not always like that. But even if you don't watch NXT that much, you'll have a good time listening to that review. And we'll, of course, all three of us will be back tomorrow to review AEW Dynamite. But this has been the AEW Dynamite preview. My thanks to the Dadley Boys. Boys, we've made it the day after What Culture Christmas Party. Thank you for joining us. And we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.